Good morning, and welcome to this month's Hancock Horizon Investments Economic Update Call. Hancock Horizon Investments provide this call as a monthly economic update for general informational purposes only. Information provided during the call is not intended to be investment advice. Opinions are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Hancock Holding Company or its affiliates. If you have any questions, please email them to david.lundgren@hancockhorizon.com. Today's panelists include Chief Investment Strategist John Portwood and Investment Directors Richard Chauvin, Jeffrey Tangus, and Greg Hlebeski, with our Chief Investment Officer David Lundgren serving as the moderator.
Good morning. Thank you, Ashley, for the introduction. Welcome to this month's Economic and Market Update call, our last installment of 2017. And John Portwood, we'll start with you. How are you this morning?
Good. And the economy is good for the last few months. That's always nice.
It sure is. And, you know, I was thinking back to earlier in the year when we were discussing the disconnect between soft data and hard data. And just as a reminder for our listeners, earlier in the year, sentiment data, how companies and individuals felt about the economy and their prospects going forward, those numbers were very strong. The actual hard data, actual results, were still coming in weak early in 2017. And it looks like, John, you know, so far it appears the hard data has caught up to the soft data. Consumers and businesses are still feeling good about their financial situation as well as their prospects going forward. And finally, the hard data, the actual economic data that's coming in is pretty strong. As we talked about on last month's call, second quarter GDP was over 3%. We had our second revision to third quarter GDP, and it was actually revised up to 3.3%. And I believe, you know, we're two-thirds into the fourth quarter, obviously one of the busiest months of the year in terms of, at least from a consumer perspective, we still have to go. But all signals kind of point to yet another 3% plus fourth quarter. So, you know, quite a streak that we've been on compared to where we've been. If you could, does fourth quarter look that encouraging to you? And kind of where do you see things going for the rest of the quarter and into 2018?
Fourth quarter should be pretty good. The current data certainly supports that. Somewhere in the 3% plus or minus range, leading indicators are still positive. They're not quite as strong as they were in the past, but that doesn't necessarily suggest that anything significant is happening at this point. Coincident indices are still a good as well. So recession risk remains low. When you look at this data, you can't make any really good guesses about recession risk more than about, you know, 3 to 6 months out. But, you know, certainly there's nothing out there currently that would suggest we're about to, you know, roll over and go into a cyclical decline. There's always something wrong, or I guess there are always some mixed data in a lot of this information. And the last quarter, for example, even though it was revised up, inventories accounted for a considerable part of that, about one percentage point almost. So that's going to be removed at some point in the future. So, you know, hopefully consumption is going to or a rise in consumption is going to take up the slack and move us forward. We've had one of these cycles before since the crash, and it faded back to something, you know, not negative, but certainly a slower growth rate. And I guess the question now is, you know, is this current cyclical upturn going to be sustained or not? And that is the big question. One of the problems that you see in all of the data is that real per capita annual disposable income is up really less than 7% in aggregate since the second quarter of 2008. So here we are 9 years into, you know, what's a very sluggish recovery so far. And you've only got, what is it? I think the number is roughly 0.7% growth rate annualized over the past 9 years for real, for real per capita disposable income. And obviously, you know, wage growth has, is a factor in that. Wage growth has been relatively meager over this entire time frame, and it would help if, you know, wage growth improves going forward. But, you know, it's certainly been a difficult period in a number of ways. One thing I might mention, thinking about long term, you know, we tend to focus on short term a lot, but I always like to bring up the long term trend because I think that's fairly important. And Dave, you asked once, I think maybe it was last quarter or last month, really. You know, are we out of the 2% plus or minus growth rate and then just something that's 3% on a longer-term basis? And the jury is still out on that. And I thought I'd go back and look at a little history, looking at changes in population growth and changes in labor force growth and how that impacts GDP growth over time. If you go back to 1981, 1982, when Reagan was going in and the Reagan, you know, they were working on the Reagan tax cuts. The ratio of the 35 to 55-year-old part of the population to those 20 to 34 and over 55, say the retirees, was less than 50%. It was about 45% of the population. But a sharp rise in the younger part of the labor force began in 1982. Some people refer to the 35-54 group as the upscale population. Those are the ones that do all the borrowing and spending and entrepreneuring and everything like that. Anyway, that part of the population, the young to middle-aged part of the population, these were the baby boomers coming on stream big time in the employment world, were rising at an extremely rapid rate all the way into 2000, when that group as a piece of the population was about 70% of the total. Well, we're coming down on the other side of the mountain now, and the number is about 53%, give or take, if the estimates are correct. And along with that, we've got a falling labor force growth rate, whereas in the past, that other period, we had a rising labor force growth rate. So, and at the same time, we have considerably more debt and less savings nationally and individually than we had back in 1982 as a, you know, a portion of the, you know, of GDP. So there are considerable headwinds out there. And, you know, exactly how this works out going forward, of course, is still a big question mark. But considering what happens to the upscale versus frugal consumer base, it just flattens out in the mid-2020s and is, according to the demographic guesses now, and goes sideways. So if that is, in fact, what's happening, then you can probably look forward to something more moderate, let's say, than, well, maybe not more moderate, really, but let's say a more moderate rate of growth than what has been the case over the last 3 months. That's not necessarily negative, but it looks like we've got some considerable headwinds to growth going forward. The Fed, for what it's worth, their guess is 1.7 long-term growth of GDP. Professor Gordon at Northwestern is less than that. He even thinks 1.5. And interestingly, the San Francisco Fed think you only need, probably, considering what's happening demographically with an older population, you only need about 100,000 jobs filled per month to match the jobs that will be available going forward in the next, in the not, you know, too distant future. So the world is going to look radically different, I guess, than a number of people expect if this does play out the way it does. But in any case, you know, the current numbers are pretty good. Yeah, we might get some help in productivity going forward. That would certainly be a good for growth. So things may turn out more favorably than we think, but currently it looks like we've still got some headwinds in front of us. And, if we don't sustain 3% growth for a while, it shouldn't be considered necessarily a negative. It means we're just going back to, whatever the economy can sustain, something similar to what we've had in the past. So, I guess my message is don't be concerned about growth falling over into recession, but don't get too excited about what might happen, in the next year or so.
Well, John, I'm gonna segue into something that I think has the potential to at least move the economy along a little bit. Hopefully it helps employment and further helps consumers and consumer spending, and that's tax reform. And, we've been talking about tax reform for the better part of 2017. It's been a grueling, ugly process, but it appears, hopefully, fingers crossed, that when we meet next month to talk about 2017 in review and our outlook for 2018, we'll have a new tax law. And, Richard, you've been our resident expert on tax reform. Maybe if you could bring our listeners up to date on where we are in the process. Odds that it becomes law, I'm thinking we're over 90%. Tell me if I'm wrong. And then maybe highlight some of the important provisions that could impact the market or the economy positively or negatively.
Good segue, Dave. Yes, I think the odds of passage of a final bill are over 90% now. It's been leaning, positively for a couple of months now, and we've said before that the Republican Congress and Senate really do need a win here. The president needs a win, and so we think that as far as this has come, it seems extremely likely that this is going to pass, and probably very soon. The Senate did pass a tax bill over the weekend, as many of you probably know. We think that the next step, it looks like it's being set up right now, is a conference committee between the House and the Senate. That's not the easiest thing to do, and I'm going to highlight a couple of the challenges that come to the conference committee that do create some risk, but we think that one way or another we'll get a final bill passed in pretty short order. Just a few of the items that are challenges I think are worth mentioning. First of all, there's the corporate tax rate issue that continues to be something they have to deal with. In one case, the House bill has a 20% corporate tax rate. The Senate bill has the same rate, but it delays the corporate tax rate by a year. It delays implementation by a year. That would be a potential a real negative if that occurs, because it reduces the stimulative effect of the bill, and therefore it puts the congressional majority at risk in the 2018 elections. So that's something we think they're very much aware of. The president did show some indication that he would be okay with a rate above 20%. He's been insisting that the 20% rate had to be the rate that the corporate rate dropped to from the current 35. But he was quoted as saying that maybe 22% will be what comes out, which indicates he probably would support that. And a 22% rate would actually solve some problems and allow early implementation of the corporate tax rate, which would be very, very positive. So that's one issue they've got to grapple with. Another one is the alternative minimum tax, which both the House and the Senate had repealed the AMT in their bills, but then the Senate put it back in order to raise some money to make the bill less expensive. So the two bills there obviously are different, and they have to be resolved. One negative to the AMT being there was that it could wipe out the research and experimentation tax credit for companies, and innovation is something that obviously the economy greatly needs. So that needs to get resolved. And the final one I'm going to mention is the income tax rates on the individual side. There's four income tax brackets in the House bill. The Senate keeps the original seven that are in place now, so that's a pretty significant difference, but we think that, again, it's resolvable if both houses come together with an intention to get this bill passed. I'm going to mention a little bit about the deadlines that impact this whole debate over the bill. Both houses want to get this done. The conference committee will want to be finished up by December 9th. That's the date of a possible government shutdown over the continuing resolution to fund the government. So that this needs to be buttoned up by then, and they all know that. And also, the additional deadline, if they happen to somehow miss the 9th, is that on the 12th there's a special election in Alabama that, of course, everyone has heard about. And if Judge Moore loses, as many predict that he will, that's one Senate seat gone. So they certainly don't want to be going back for the final bill with one less Senate seat. So obviously there's a lot of pressure to get this tax bill to the president's desk before those deadlines. And finally, I want to mention the inaccurate reporting that's gone on with this bill. There's been some humor about this, but everybody seems to think that their taxes are going up and that somebody else is benefiting. The middle class have been told that the rich are getting the tax cut and they aren't, and the rich believe that they're getting a tax increase and that the corporate tax rates are going down and the wealthy's tax, the wealthy individuals' taxes are going to pay for that. So what the positive of that is that, in truth, there's plenty of tax cut to go around, and it really does target the middle class as it was the intention, and that when that becomes evident, when this bill does pass, if and when it does pass, and again, we said it would most likely, that there'll be positive feelings about that because people will see the benefit in their taxes. So this is going to help disposable income in 2018 and therefore hopefully propel that GDP growth into that 3 to perhaps higher rate of growth that John mentioned. So there is a catalyst here for stronger growth if the bill is structured right, if it gets passed. So looking pretty good at this point, Dave.
All right, so you're saying in January we're going to talk about the new tax law, and that'll be the last time we talk about tax reform for a while, huh?
I believe that's the case.
All right, hope you're right.
Me too.
Jeff Tangus, good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
Big meeting for the Fed next week. I was checking on Bloomberg. It looks like the market believes there's a more than 98% chance that when they meet next week that they'll raise rates, which will make the third time in 2017. And as far as I can remember, it's the first time in quite a while that they've actually projected going into the year that they'll raise rates three times, and they did. I guess first question, do you believe that we're going to see a rate hike next week?
Absolutely. As you mentioned, investors generally believe there's a 98% chance. I'm not sure who that other 2% is, but I think it is a fait accompli at this point that the Fed, certainly with Janet Yellen headed out, her last move definitely wants to complete what she started in early 2017.
And then let's kind of fast forward to 2018, and I know we'll talk about it again in our January outlook for 2018. But the dot plot, which is basically where members of the Fed project or predict what they think will happen, and it looks like we have another three hikes coming in 2018. First of all, is that correct? I'm assuming that it is, and that what do you think at this point the odds or probability, that we see them continue to raise rates?
Well, you're right. According to the Fed's their own forecast of what they intend to do, all things considered, they plan to raise three times, and the trend has generally been March, June, or September. And then a third final in December. So I think that's the odds-on favorite. Richard Chauvin talked about the tax reform, and it's unclear at this point just how quickly those benefits will filter into the economy. Certainly the economy seems to be doing well. So I think the Fed this year, it should be easier to make those three increases. The only, I guess, the counterargument to that, of course, is that they're still not seeing the inflation. So if they don't raise the three times that they intend to, it'll most likely be because inflation expectations remain persistently low. And so that could cause them to hesitate a little bit.
Jeff, one thing, when we have conversations with clients, I think there's this expectation or thought that as the Fed moves short-term rates, they normally translate that over into higher longer-term rates. And I think it's been interesting, we're looking at the Fed moving three times this year. We'll probably see at least, a couple hikes next year, I guess. But the 10-year Treasury, which is really kind of the benchmark for longer-term rates, we haven't seen a lot of movement. It's kind of stayed steady, and I was looking at the month of November, it's a really tight range between 2.3 and 2.4. If the Fed continues on this path, do you see longer-term rates also moving up? And talk about why or why not.
Well, the big influence there is inflation. The Fed controls directly short-term interest rates. Generally, that's out to 2 years. And so the Fed increasing overnight rates has had a direct impact on shorter-term treasuries. But the longer end, 10 years on out, is really controlled by investors and inflation, long-term inflation expectations. And as I mentioned, in long-term inflation expectations, even by the Federal Reserve's own measures, still remains stubbornly below 2%. And so we have to see some inflation numbers there to see the long end move a little higher. And then the other aspect of that is the rest of the world, Europe and Japan, still has extremely low interest rates. I was looking this morning. Across Europe, 2-year government bond yields are still well in the negative range. I'm talking negative 30 basis points, negative 50 basis points. In Switzerland, a 2-year government bond is still negative 1%. So those global that global influence of low rates is certainly going to have some impact here as capital moves around the world. So I think the 10-year, that 240 level that you talked about, is a pretty stubborn resistance level. Until we see some inflation, it's going to be tough for the 10-year to move decisively higher than that 240 level.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jeff. Greg, good morning.
Good morning.
One thing that we have seen quite a bit of movement in is the stock market, and fortunately in the right direction. I know we still have a little less than a month to go, but wow, the run continues. Great month in November. S&P 500 up over 3%, bringing the year-to-date number up over 20%. Small cap stocks did well, almost 3%. International trailed a bit. They were up about 1%, but the streak of positive returns here in 2017 continues. Let's talk a little bit about the short term, and I know it's incredibly difficult to predict. But do we go with the clean sweep every month positive in 2017 for the market? And then we don't want to get too much into our discussion for 2018 because we're going to do that in our January call, but maybe just kind of a preview of where we are in the market cycle and what you think is going to happen.
Yeah, it's getting really monotonous reporting month after month another positive return in the markets. But
I think everybody's okay with it if it's monotonous.
Indeed, yes. The Dow reported up 4.2% in November. As I said, the year-to-date number up almost 26%. S&P, as you mentioned, was up over 3%, and that brings its year-to-date up 21%. Mid-caps, actually, we saw a reversal in that trend we've been battling back and forth, large versus small, small versus large, but mid-caps had a better showing in the month, up 3 points, and then followed by small caps, which were up 3.5, so they beat the larger cap, S&P 500. As far as growth versus value, we actually saw value outperform this month, or past month, and the growth index returned about 3.4%, or I should say the value index, let me see if I got my numbers mixed up here. Value was actually up 3.39 for the month versus growth 2.82, so value did better. But again, if you look on a year-to-date basis, growth is still by far much further ahead of value, with growth being up 26.7 and value stocks being up 13.5, so about double there. Again, international was positive, not quite as up as far as the U.S. markets, but just looking at sectors briefly, the top-performing areas were telecom, which was up 6% for the month, which is pretty strong, followed by staples, up 5.7%, and consumer discretionary, up 5.1%. The worst-performing sectors, although I should also mention that all the sectors generated positive returns for the month of November, but materials was up. That was the lowest-performing sector, up 0.99%, followed by tech, which was up 1.2%, and then lastly, energy, which was up 1.8%. But again, on a year-to-date basis, tech is the star sector for the year, up 38.8%, and we're seeing some profit-taking going on there right now. The next closest sector that even comes close is healthcare, which was up 22.9%. So only two sectors had year-to-date negative performance, and that being energy, which was down about 5.6%, and telecom down 6.6%. Looking at earnings, which I think not only for this year, but looking ahead, I think both are pretty rosy, and we've been reporting kind of good expectations for most of the balance of 2017, but the estimated growth rate right now for quarter four to what 2017 is 10.5%. That's slightly down from the 11.3% estimate that we had on September 30th. So mainly due to downward revisions by Wall Street analysts, that downward guidance was primarily led by industrials. Over the quarter, 71 companies have adjusted earnings down, which is not unusual. They usually start out a little bit too overly optimistic, versus 36 companies that are issuing upward guidance, so not too much concern there. Again, just from a valuation perspective, current estimates would put the 12-month forward-looking P/E ratio at 18.3, so still historically on the high side. It's both above the 5-year average of 15.8, and it's also above the 10-year average of 14.1. But as far as the rest of the month goes, I would think more of the same. I don't see anything on the horizon that would change that. Thinking that I haven't really looked at the retail figures, but I'm thinking that the retail numbers are probably still pretty good. I'm guessing that the internet sales, again, are going to best the brick-and-mortar stores. So, you know, even if we had some event that occurred, when we had a down month, even a significantly down December for the end of the year, which I'm really not anticipating, we still end up with some pretty darn good return numbers for the year.
Absolutely.
And just looking ahead, I think, you know, given the strong earnings growth and, you know, perhaps touching a little bit on the tax and the administration does get some of its policy initiatives passed, I think it's going to be a pretty good start to 2018, and if we really do get a boost from cash flow standpoint in corporate America and a cash flow standpoint from the consumer with more disposable income, I think it could be a pretty good year overall in the market and the economy. So keep your fingers crossed.
All right. Thank you, Greg, and thank you, everyone, for joining us this morning. Join us next month on January 9th, which is actually going to be the second Tuesday of the month, for our review of 2017 and our outlook for 2018. Thank you again. Have a good day.